arrive here at a critical moment.
Hello, I'm Dan Brown.
And I'm Brandi Crawford Urryu, and we are your TV BFFs.
That's right, and this is a podcast about the TV shows that people love most. And this is our year-end 2021 TV in Review episode.
I can't believe it's the end of 2021.
I can't either, for a multitude of reasons, but we'll keep it to TV, mostly because there was just so much.
So much.
Great TV. I don't quite know where to start. We're going to talk about a lot of it. This is a celebration of the year in TV. It will be a smorgasbord of shows. We're going to talk about a lot. We're going to build criteria. It's going to be a little bit different. We'll get to that in a minute, but just kind of like diving right into it, Brandi, like what were your overall thoughts on like the year in TV that was 2021?
You know, I thought it was a pretty great year for TV. I feel like a lot of shows, you know, it was a great year for TV shows that came back. I feel like we had, like 2020 was like such a shit show of a year, and we really didn't know what we were going to get. Like people are really trying to figure this shit out on the fly.
Lots of shows on hiatus.
Yeah, shows going on hiatus. Things were supposed to start back filming. They couldn't because COVID. And I think that people showed up and like they did the damn thing. And I'm really, really, really impressed at not only at the new shows that started, but at the shows that returned and like had to make do with filming during a very, very, very hard time.
Yeah, I agree. I think you're absolutely right. And I think many of the shows that we'll talk about have some sort of version of that, whether, like you said, it was returning shows that had to wait much longer. And we're still waiting on some, you know. Yeah, a lot of returning shows came back, and that wait, I think, did some of them a lot of good. People were able to catch up during quarantine, a lot of shows that kind of made those returning seasons feel more impactful and more like events, which is really fun. Mm-hmm. But yeah, tons of new stuff and just a lot overall. So like, you know me, I'm a bit of a nerd. So I ran my own numbers, and the number of new television seasons, these aren't new shows, but like new seasons of television that I watched this year came in right around 50.
What?
Which sounds like a lot, but then when you look at it, it's like, no, that kind of, that tracks. No, that's right. That was a weekly. I binged that one. Like, but yeah, I averaged about a season of television a week or so.
Oh, wow. Okay. I'm not there, but thinking back, but like, and I have not run my numbers, but just thinking back to, there were no shows that I dropped this year.
Oh, that's cool.
So everything that came back, I kept watching.
Plus you added new stuff.
And plus I did add new stuff. So like maybe I'm up there.
I think you're like, without even sweating, I bet you're at least like 30, 35.
Yeah.
I know you well. I know the shows that you watch, like you're up there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like there's a bunch of shows that like didn't necessarily make any lists of mine, but that I still did definitely watch.
Right.
And that I can't even remember the name of right now. So, you know, that they really didn't make an impression.
Exactly. Speaking of making an impression. So let's get into kind of how this episode is going to shake out. If this is your first episode, welcome. This is another bonus episode coming off the heels of a somewhat recent kind of fall 2021 current catch up, and we built kind of a current criteria, and we had such a great time doing that. We thought, let's run it back, but this time do a criteria for the whole of the 2021 year in TV. So we're going to put together a criteria that's kind of an overview of what we thought were, you know, our best and favorite shows of 2021, but we're going to do a little bit different. We're going to throw some rules out the window, and here's how it's going to work. So we're kind of each going to put together like a top 10-ish. And those 10 will be 4 almost shows, although we'll also mention some honorable mentions because, again, we watched a ton of stuff. But like 4 almost shows. And then for our criteria, we're still going to do 6 shows each. But instead of doing 2 best, 2 favorite, and 2 forever, as is the customary TV BFF criteria, instead, we're going to do 3 best and 3 favorite, since it's hard to pick a forever show just based on the year in the TV that we watched that was new this year alone. Mm-hmm. We're also going to throw out the genre rules so that we can get a more accurate depiction of our actual top show. So in best, you could, Brandi, go 3 dramas if you wanted to. In favorites, you could go two comedies and an unscripted. We're throwing out that specific rule because I think it's just going to be more fun this way, right? What do you think?
I think so too, just for this time. So don't get excited, future guests. You guys are going to have to abide by the rules.
That's right. 2022, the rules will be back when our guests return. We will get back to our classic criteria, but you know, it's a bonus episode. It's the year in review. And again, this is just what we watched, right? We can't speak to things that we didn't watch. Like for instance, I'm looking at my laundry list of shows here, and here are shows that I know are great just by word of mouth or reviews or poking up on other top 10 lists. Haven't watched one of these. Foundation, Girls 5 Eva, It's a Sin, Lupin, Underground Railroad, Pen 15 Season 2, Dave, The Great, Maid, Dickinson, Made for Love, We Are Lady Parts, The Chair, Love Life. I mean, like there's so many shows that I feel like I would love and have heard a lot about, but like couldn't get to them. Couldn't even get to them.
Yeah, you really missed the boat with Girls 5 Eva and Dave. Those are both amazing.
I know. And that's the thing. I look at this list and it makes me sad that I didn't get to watch them. But it's okay because there's plenty that we did get to watch. So shall we jump right in?
Let's jump in. Okay. Do you want to start with our, let's start with our almost shows. Like what kind of almost made our lists?
Well, let's do this before we get to our almost, because the almost is kind of like, it's not on the criteria, but it's still kind of in our top 10.
Okay.
So it's still like kind of on the list a little bit.
Okay.
Do you have any honorable mentions of like your almost, like they were just outside your top 10 looking in and didn't quite make an almost or a best or a favorite?
My almost, I would say Music Box on HBO.
Ooh, the documentary series.
It's a documentary series EP'd by Bill Simmons. It's really good. Like my two favorite episodes have been Alanis Morissette, Jagged Little Pill.
Okay, nice.
And they did a whole doc on Kenny G. And for those of you who don't know, Kenny G is one of my favorite artists. He was Breathless was my first CD. And according to this documentary, I'm basic as hell. Because apparently Breathless was one of the most best-selling albums of like all time.
Wow.
So I was not alone in really vibing with Forever in Love, which was my favorite track. And Sentimental. And the Peebo Bryson track that was like, listen, the wedding song. I wanted him to play at my wedding. And like watching this doc, I just felt so seen.
Oh, that's awesome.
I was like, oh my God, there's so many other Kenny G fans. And he just like, he's an interesting guy. And I don't think I'd ever thought about him as a person.
Until now. Until the Music Box doc. That's cool.
Yeah, no, the Music Box docs. There's one on DMX. They just did one on Saturday Night Fever. They're really well done. They're each done by different filmmakers.
Oh, cool. That was the Woodstock one also in that series?
Yeah, the Woodstock was in that series.
Woodstock one. I think the most recent one is, I think maybe the last one, the Juice WRLD doc as well.
But it's on HBO, and I recommend that you check it out. Like, even if it's, you're like, I don't know if I really like Kenny G. Trust me, it's good. You should watch it.
That's fun.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a ton of my honorable mention, just a couple I want to shout out. Invincible, an animated superhero thing that was really dark and gritty, I liked a lot. Yellow Jackets, another dark and gritty newer show on Showtime, was close. An unscripted show called Making It, which is just like the most wholesome hour on television that you'll ever watch. It's like the craft competition show hosted by Amy Poehler and Nick Offerman. Oh, God, warm my heart. So those were all close, didn't make the almost list, but so was one of our shared favorite shows from our OG criteria, The Challenge. So this year saw, count them, 4 different seasons of The Challenge. We had Free Agents to start the year, then Spies, Lies, and Allies. And then we also had in this calendar year, 2 seasons of All Stars.
Wow.
None of them made my list, but I mean, that's a lot of content from our shared favorite show.
It's true. And I will say, The Challenge is still one of my favorite shows. It's still on my list. This particular season, the latest season, Spies, Lies, and Allies, left a lot to be desired for me. I don't know if you felt that way.
I did. There was a lot of, I feel like it's it ended strong. I like the finale. I like the final.
The finale was good.
And Brandy, you called it from, I think, episode one. You were like, watch out for Emmy. She's going to do something. She's going to go the distance. And she fucking literally did. Went to the final. So great call.
She she stirred shit so expertly that first episode that I was like, this is somebody to watch.
It was almost a red herring because after that, she was so genuine and nice and just like, she didn't seem to be stirring any shit. But anyway.
Yeah.
So anything else honorable mention, or do you want to jump into Almost and get to our top tens?
I think we can jump into Almost.
All right. What is your first Almost show? Your first show to crack your top 10 of the year?
My first show is The Other Two.
Ooh, great.
Yeah. It's such a great show. It could have gone into favorite, but I haven't totally finished the second season yet. So like, it's still, but like, I know it's going to be good.
Right.
It's just so nice to have just like a nice, funny, easy breezy watch. And it is an easy breezy watch. I mean, it gets like, there are some serious undertones sometimes when you really get into like the relationship dynamic between the members of the family, like between Pat and the kids, between, you know, like the brother, like the youngest Justin Bieber type brother, plus like the gay brother and like this, like, and like kind of their whole like kind of quarter life crises that's going on. But like, I'm a sucker for a half hour show that's easy to watch. And also just like, just the laughs keep coming.
I love it. And we went into this a little bit. This was also on your current criteria, our most recent bonus episode before this. So if you haven't checked that out, please do. Mm-hmm. We talk about The Other Two in more specifics, specifically about that season two, which I haven't watched it, but I know what I think is interesting is it kind of shifts focus a little bit away from the younger brother and more towards the mom of the family, played by Molly Shannon. And as we talked about, Molly Shannon is just an absolute,
you can't go wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
An absolute dream superstar, if you will. Mm-hmm. Speaking of easy to watch half hour comedies. Okay. So here's the thing. I set up these rules and I'm instantly going to break them. It's our show. We can do what we please. But so I have in my Almost shows, two half-hour comedies kind of tied as for like, you know, one of the slots here. They're both Apple comedies, which is why I'm grouping them together. It's Ted Lasso season two and Mythic Quest season two.
Okay.
Ted Lasso has been spoken about plenty. I don't think we're breaking new ground to say Ted Lasso is a really great show. If you haven't checked it out, please do. It's, speaking of heartwarming content, it's right up there with the best and super funny, super sharp. I disagree that season two lost its fastball, so to speak, compared to season one. I think it was still incredibly strong and had really great character development and character turns. So definitely check that out. But I also really wanted to shout out Mythic Quest, which is a show created by Rob McElhenney of It's Always Sunny fame. And I mentioned it as like in passing in an episode in season one, because I was kind of watching it at the time. Mm-hmm. But really, really well done show. Not as like raunchy and like envelope pushing as in It's Always Sunny. It's a bit more grounded. It's like a workplace comedy that takes place at a video game development firm or company. Because of that workplace, it can be kind of very specific in its humor, which is really great, but also is just rip-roaringly funny and laugh out loud funny, but has a ton of heart. It didn't air in 2021, but it had a pandemic special in 2020 when that was a thing that was probably the most affecting like pandemic special that I've ever seen of all of those versions of those shows. And then it came out of that into 2021 with its second season and just never let up and never slowed down. And characters, you know, their arcs were deepened and there was a more backstory for some folks and just a really strong show. If you're looking for have our comedies, Apple's doing it really well. Ted Lasso, Mythic Quest.
I mean, I have to say, those are both two shows that you recommended that I watch, and I did. And I love the first season of Ted Lasso. I have not watched the second season yet. And I watched the first two episodes of Mythic Quest. I was in, but like, really? I hadn't gone back. I did.
Oh, wow. What'd you think?
I like it. I like it a lot. There's so much stuff to watch that I haven't gotten back into it, but like, I would like to.
Keep your eye when you get back into it on the Poppy character.
Okay.
Her journey is pretty awesome. Pretty great stuff.
Awesome.
All right. What's next on your Almost list?
Next on my almost list is a reality show on Bravo, and it's called Shaws of Sunset.
Ooh, we've never talked about this before.
We've never talked about it before. And the reason that it's on my almost list is because Bravo, I feel, has been having a, they've kind of course corrected in the latter half of the year, but I feel like Bravo's had a little bit of a problem because all of their major franchises have been with us for so long. We've known these characters now for like over a decade, and it's gotten like a little bit stale, you know?
Yeah. Like some fatigue, you know,
there's a little bit of fatigue there. And I feel like with Shaws, they just came correct this year. So for those of you who don't know, Shaws of Sunset is about a group of Iranian friends in LA, and they are actually all friends. So these are like real relationships.
Love to see that.
In this season, there was a lot of fallout from stuff that happened last season, which last season, one of the big characters, MJ, had a baby. And it was a really big deal. You know, she's like pushing 50 and, you know, she really wanted this baby. She's got this crazy husband named Tommy, who's like not Iranian. He is like from, I don't know, Staten Island, Long Island, like somewhere that, you know what I mean?
Tri-state white.
Yeah, tri-state, very tri-state white. And like you know, kind of big, looks like he could have been a cop. Like a cop and or like coaches his son's like football team.
All of the above even.
Yeah. And there was just like, and so MJ and this guy Reza are like best friends, and they had this huge falling out, and Reza said some shit to her that I cannot believe he would say knowing that there's cameras filming him. But basically, I'll just tell you guys so you don't have to Google it. She came to like a party and they were yelling at each other, and he was like, well, you're the one who had 10 abortions.
Whoa.
Yeah. So he and Tommy like got into it. There's restraining orders. There's like a whole thing. So I didn't really know how they were going to come into this season, because then another person in the cast, her name's Gigi, and she's insane. Like just like loves knives, loves guns. Like it's just a very like just she's very scary. She wanted to have a baby, and she did it by herself, and so then she had a baby. So you know, I have two of the cast members that have babies, and usually in these reality shows when people have babies, it's the death knell for the show, because it's like how are you going to be interesting now? You have a baby, you can't be irresponsible anymore. Like like it's okay for you to be irresponsible if you have like middle schoolers, like as the housewives do, middle schoolers and high schoolers, but like if you have like a tiny baby, like you cannot be getting wasted and having stupid fights.
Right.
Like, it doesn't. But anyway, this was the first time that I've seen a show introduce babies into the narrative and they didn't lose a step.
Wow.
And I was really, really, really impressed. So Shaws of Sunset didn't quite make it into my best or favorite, but I really think it was a very strong almost.
Nice. I see your unscripted show, and I will also put one into the table in my almost list. Top Chef Portland.
Okay.
I just, you know, and I had this in my favorites for a minute. Some other things had to jump in there, but I can't, every time it's on, it's the first thing that I watched on the DVR. I look forward to Wednesday nights. I've mentioned this before. I was in a Top Chef fantasy league. I got pretty close to the money. I picked somebody who went pretty far. It was a filmed in COVID season, but they did, I think, a really good job of adjusting their format, where they had kind of like a lot of returning Top Chef, you know, alumni just be the guest judges. They would kind of cycle in and out, so they didn't have to like fly in new people and have new people, you know, quarantine all the time. So they shifted the format in a way that I think worked really well. And it was as entertaining as ever. I think some people disagree that the older Top Chef gets, the softer it gets as far as like cutthroat competition. You know, people tend to respect each other more and cheer each other on a little bit more. I like that in my reality TV. I don't love the cutthroat competition unless it is, of course, the challenge. So yeah, everything about Top Chef, it keeps bringing it. I can't wait till the next season. But yeah, Top Chef Portland really brought it. The casting was great. Great slew of chefs. I can't wait to see them come back and continue to be part of the Top Chef universe. So didn't make a criteria, but solidly in the almost list for sure.
It was a really good season. I won't spoil it for those of you who haven't watched it yet, but like, how did you feel about the winner?
Well, in hindsight, not great.
Yeah.
Okay. In hindsight, not great. Really wish my girl Dawn went the distance. Slight spoiler there. I had her in fantasy and she went very far. I won't tell you how far, but yeah, a little bit of a bitter taste at the end, though. We'll just kind of forget that Gabe ever happened and move on with everybody else.
Yeah. So yeah, well, my next almost show really was almost should have been a favorite, but like I can't move anything else out of my favorites. But Dave, it is on FX. It's Dave Bird, otherwise known as Lil Dicky, and this season was absolutely fantastic. It was season two, and for those of you who don't know about Lil Dicky, he was kind of like a joke rapper.
Yeah.
But he actually is like a really smart and creative and like just, he's just really, really good.
Are you like retired from rap or something and nobody told me, or like?
I'm sorry, I'm on this new online dating platform and man, is it an oasis. Every single person on here is either an incredibly hot girl or an incredibly successful man, so.
Nigga, if I had your status, bro, I'd be taxing everybody and their mama to kick it.
What? Live, love, laugh, bro? That's her bio.
Well, what would your bio be? I bring girls over and I watch Surviving R. Kelly with them because I don't know the content of it. And then I try to kiss them during the commercial breaks like a fucking creep.
Enough.
Was it not a horrible decision on your end?
On our end. It was our end because me and her both made the decision to watch that shit.
Kata, do you want to get on this app? Because I can get you on.
What I loved about this season is like last season was kind of all about like really introducing you to like who Lil Dicky is and like how he like how this guy's a rapper, like what, like what's going on, and like, and he's like so over the top and so like egotistical and narcissistic that you're like, how is this person real? And this season they address it.
Okay,
do you know what I mean? And so like it really makes him a real person.
Perfect. I was just gonna ask, like, the way you described season one, Lil Dicky, he sounds hard to root for.
Yeah, he was very hard to root for. But he's surrounded by people who you want to root for.
Okay.
But in this season, I feel like every episode it was like Dave like being brought down a peg of like, oh, you can't treat people like this. B, you can't expect people to treat you as a certain kind of way if you're going to treat them like this. And it's just like, basically it was the season of Dave's accountability, which like sounds like really boring, but like was absolutely amazing. The season finale was, I mean, I cried, I laughed. It's so good. And this is, I think it's eight episodes. They're half hours.
Great.
Guys, get on it. It's such a great show.
I will pledge to you. I'll make this pledge right now. The next time we do a podcast in the new year, I will have watched Dave.
Good.
I've heard about it several times now from you a couple times. And now there's like a full two seasons. That feels like a nice little weekend binge. I will have watched it by the next time we talk. I got some homework. I'm excited.
Yeah.
Speaking of shows about taking accountability, you ready for this segue? My next almost show is a show called Kevin Can Fuck Himself.
I've got to watch it.
Oh, it was on AMC. It stars Annie Murphy.
From Schitt's Creek.
Yep, Annie from Schitt's Creek. And she plays a sitcom wife in like a kind of like, you know, Chuck Lorre multicam CBS style sitcom. And Kevin is her husband in the show. And Kevin has a brother. Wait, is it his brother? He's got a best friend, a dad. Anyway, he's got like, you know, a cadre of guys
the
around
tropes.
Him. Yeah, all the tropes. And, you know, he's, you know, a very charismatic idiot. And so you have Kevin, you have kind of his cadre of, you know, kind of goons around him. And then Annie Murphy plays Allison, his wife. And what's really cool is that there's like a kind of huge shift of tone in this show. So like every episode you watch, you're watching like a full sitcom episode embedded in this larger series, because as soon as Allison walks off the sitcom set, like the color shifts, the tone shifts, the music changes, and she's in like a gritty drama, like an AMC drama. Like she walks off the set of a sitcom into a drama, and the show does both things simultaneously.
Boy, this was one hell of a birthday. And I love my gift, babe.
I'm glad.
You just gotta bring it back tomorrow and exchange it for the right color. Simply doesn't get any better than shiny black leather. Your class.
Where are you off to?
I left something in my car.
Jesus Christ, lady, you know...
No, shut up! You listen to me for once. I'm not sitting around waiting for you to make your move, okay? It's too important. You do this, I need to know what's happening, when it's happening, and if I don't like it, you don't do it. You do it my way, or you don't get the money.
I've never seen anything like it, really. And the finale, speaking of finales, may be the biggest gasp I had watching a show as it happened. The finale was like, whoa, they're going there. And now I can't wait for it to come back. But it's like really, really good. Annie Murphy's excellent. And the rest of the cast I wasn't really familiar with, which is always fun to kind of meet some new people as well. But Definitely check that out. It's on AMC. I'm sure it's on demand. Give it a search and you'll be able to find it. And I think it's coming back for another season. Yeah.
I want to watch it. I definitely want to watch it. To round out my Almost shows is a show that I think it was an Almost show when we did our criteria of color, but also might have been on my criteria, but it's great. And it's called A Black Lady Sketch Show. And it came back for season two this year and still got it.
Nice.
What I love about the show is what I have always loved about the show, which is that they just get weird. And I love seeing smart black women get weird. Like, because guess what? Like, dorky white guys don't have the jump on that. Like, we can be weird too. And like, have like weird out there comedy. And I just love that they just go for it. It's a delightful, delightful show. They still have like the running through line of the end of the world party.
Okay, cool. I was going to ask about that.
And except they continue it.
Okay.
Like, so they're not in the apartment anymore. They're in a friend's like loft, and it's a whole thing. It's really good. It's on HBO.
Okay. Oh man, I got to catch up on Black Lady Sketch Show, because there's not a ton of sketch shows out there. I mean, there's more and more, you know, coming out, I guess, but like you don't see them often. So when you, when you find a good one, you gotta check it out. Mm-hmm. Okay. The last show on my Almost list is, it might be surprising that it didn't make the criteria, because I think it's critically in audience, you know, fan wise, word of mouth, Netflix metrics will tell you it might be the most popular show of all time, based on their numbers. Who can believe that? Nobody really knows, but Squid Game didn't make the criteria, but, definitely in my top 10, and it's on my Almost list.
Well, I honestly think that is a perfect segue into starting with our best shows, because my first best show is Squid Game.
Okay. All right. Shit. Okay. Yeah. I love that. All right. So it's on both of our top 10.
Yeah. It was not an Almost for me. I thought it was the best. I thought it was best for so many reasons.
Let's get into it.
Number one, I have never really watched any K-dramas. I loved when we had Alicia Hanna on the show, and you guys should definitely check out that episode if you haven't already. She's absolutely amazing. And she really turned me on to a bunch of different shows, which I kind of tried my hand at. And like, I was just kind of like, wow, this is like super melodramatic. Okay. And so I wasn't really sure what I was going to think of Squid Game, but like everyone's watching it. So I was like, all right, like I want to be a part of the cultural conversation. And what a great show. And to think that like not only did I watch it without subtitles, I watched it like dubbed in English, which I didn't know that like I didn't have to watch it like that. And I kind of want to go but like the fact that like even though and the acting was like so over the top with the dubs, like it was still such an amazing and affecting show. And it's beautifully shot. I was surprised at like every corner. Like it was the kind of thing that after that first episode, I was like, I can't watch this. That was too much. I cannot watch this. This was the most violent thing I've ever seen. And like, I'm drawing a line. And my husband's like, we got to watch the second episode. Come on. And then after the second episode, I watch and I'm like, okay, great.
Yeah. And I think that second episode, I think for me, if I were to, it was close to my best as well. If it were going to be in the criteria, it probably would have been in best. And I think just because the storytelling was done in such a way, because like, listen, it didn't reinvent the wheel, right? Like, you know, there's been shows with this kind of like battle royale. I mean, from battle royale through like Hunger Games and like lots of other properties that have done like the battle to survive, last to survive wins, this sort of fucked up social experiment type situation. But that second episode of Squid Game, where you're right, like episode one is super brutal. A lot of people die and you're like, what the fuck? This is traumatic. And then slight spoiler here. It happens during the season though, but like basically everyone is given the option to leave and they do. And then they all decide on their own accord to come back and continue playing this literally fatal game. And because like that storytelling choice then makes you be like, oh yeah, I can now subscribe to this because they chose to be here.
They decided it. Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Like they made this plan.
And then from there, just you're off to the races. And you're like, I think I watched it in, I think a day. I watched the whole thing in a day.
It's just, it's a really, it was a really, really great show. It's one of the kind, it's the kind of show that like makes me just like happy about TV and like excited to watch something. Cause it's like, yes, like I want to watch good shit like this. Like, Yes. 100%. So what about you, Dan? What's up first for you and best?
Okay. So remember when we did our criteria and we did this whole thing where we need to decide between two shows to make a slot? That's the position I find myself in for my first best slot. It's between two HBO dramas, although one is technically an HBO Max, but HBO Family of Networks dramas. The first one is Mare of Easttown. Did you ever end up watching Mare of Easttown?
No.
No, no. White people getting murdered and
People getting murdered and like looking plain.
A lot of plain looking folks in that show. And I love Mare of Easttown. I really, really liked it. I thought of that sort of like, you know, prestige drama, detective, brutal killing sort of, you know, genre of TV. It's the best I'd seen in a long time. I thought Kate Winslet was absolutely incredible. Great acting across the board. It turned into a story more about like friendship and the power of friendship and what that does, you know, in unforgiving circumstances, and was really, really, really well done. So this was on my criteria. This was going to be my best show until 2 days ago when I watched a new show that I had mentioned in our last episode. It was a show that I was looking forward to. I put it in kind of like our future, like looking forward category, Station 11.
Okay.
On HBO Max, based on a novel of the same name by Emily St. John Mandel. I think the novel came out in 2014. And it's a post-apocalyptic story. Trigger warning, the inciting incident is a
coronavirus.
A flu pandemic that kills 99% of the population. So a little bit triggering in that respect, but you know, coronavirus, this is not, this is kind of like a, you know, Stephen King
stand
level flu virus sort of deal, like Captain Trips, if you will. But the show itself is kind of about like how stories and storytelling help people through traumatic events in their life. And that really resonates with me. I've used stories and storytelling and TV shows in particular to get me through some of the hardest points in my life. And I think a lot of people do. I think it's a great release. It's a great mirror to kind of reflect what you're thinking and feeling back at you in a lot of ways. So this is very much doing that. I will say that the only hard episode from a pandemic perspective is the first one. There's three episodes out as of this recording. By the time this episode releases, there'll be several more. It's kind of coming out in like a three episode, like a weird sort of release model. But I watched these three episodes, and after the third episode specifically, I'm like, yo, I'm not sure I've seen anything as good as this all year. Like,
wow,
honestly, like it is so well done. So it's by the creative team is Patrick Somerville, who wrote on Leftovers, who wrote on The Bridge, who did Maniac, that Netflix show. So it very much has some like Leftovers type vibes to it. It feels kind of very much of that ilk, but with like a more overtly post-apocalyptic. And then it's directed by Hiro Murai, who directed a lot of Atlanta episodes, a lot of Donald Glover's work just in general. Jeremy Padeswa, who's done like Thrones and a whole bunch of other stuff. So like the creative pedigree is there, and the acting, like my God, the performances already just through three episodes. One in particular, this woman named Danielle Deadweiler, who plays Miranda, who wrote the graphic novel called Station 11, which is what gives the show its name. So basically, like, there's this pandemic, and then you're kind of, you see it as it's happening, and then it flashes forward 20 years. But there's a lot of like back and forth then and now, and you know, it goes to year two and then back and then up to year 20. So there's a lot of like timey-wimey-ness, which I personally love. I love a nonlinear story. Mm-hmm. But then it's funny because in episode one, you think, oh, this guy Jeevan's the main character, right? This is through his perspective. And then you get to episode two and it's like, oh no, actually it's Kirsten, who's played by and is an adult by Mackenzie Davis. Then you get to episode three and you're like, oh no, wait a second. This is actually about this woman, Miranda, who was obsessing over this Station 11 graphic novel and by means and ways ended up in Kirsten's hands. And then it became kind of like this, like almost prophetic Bible-esque sort of like hugely influential work the Kirsten character kind of like lives by. And then you kind of start seeing how all these different tentacles come together. I'm doing a bad job of explaining this. All this is like, you really need to watch it. Don't be scared off by the pandemic of it all. It's like incredible storytelling, incredible performances. I'm only three episodes in. And like I said, I think it's the best thing I've seen all year.
I mean, look, I had obviously been hearing about this coming out. I read the book way back when and like didn't really remember it. Like went on to Wikipedia to like refresh my memory and was like, oh, like I don't remember. Like maybe I'll watch. I don't know. But like I feel like you kind of sold me like on the pedigree of the creatives that are doing it that like I think I'm going to take a look.
I love selling you on shows, Brandy. It's like my mm-hmm. favorite thing to do. All right. So I think that kicks Mare down off the criteria mm-hmm. into the almost shows. Which now we're looking at more than 10, but again, we make the rules just so we can break them. But mm-hmm. all right, Station 11 on the list with more episodes to go. Highly unorthodox, but I feel it in my bones that it is the right move.
I feel you. Well, my next best is a show. I feel like you were the one that turned me on to this show.
Ooh, okay.
But it is How To with John Wilson.
Yes. Okay. We're talking season two now.
Season two. Yeah. So I caught up on all of season one, which by catching up is six episodes. They're half an hour. Like you could do this, everyone.
Right.
and you know, season two started right after Thanksgiving, I think. Okay. I think we're only maybe three episodes in, maybe four. And it just is so innovative in how it's shot, how the story is of the show is told.
So for people who haven't seen it, how would you describe How To with John Wilson to a stranger?
Wow. So How To with John Wilson. John Wilson is a documentarian. And I mean that in every, like when you think, what's a documentarian? Somebody that just documents everything? Yes. Yes is the answer to that.
Yes, that
documents
is right.
Everything. He is, the camera is a part of him. And so every single thing you see in the show is something that he has shot. I mean, I probably hasn't shot like all of it, but like he always has, he just is always filming things. He lives in Ridgewood, I think, in Queens.
Okay.
And he brings New York to life in a way that I have not seen.
Yeah. And not
anywhere else.
And not in like the glamorous New York, the lights bring it to life. Like just like but the like, everyday, almost mundane of New York.
Yeah. It's like, yes, this is what it's like to live in New York. Like, for instance, the most recent episode was about parking. And I would be so interested to hear from someone who doesn't live in New York that watched this episode. Because if you live in New York and you have a car, this episode was real. Like, it was real. Because parking is, it's insane. It's insane what you do to park your car for free in New York City.
But then like what tangents does he go on? Because that's the thing that I noticed about that first season that I really loved. You'd be like, you know, this episode is about how to make the perfect risotto. And by the end of it, you're in tears because it's this story about him and his elderly neighbor and the unlikely mm-hmm. friendship and like all the things. Like his topic is never really the topic, you know?
No, he always goes off into other things. So the parking episode really turned into how to keep something,
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because like he ended up getting like this perfect spot, like right in front of his place. And he's like, and now that I have it, he's like, all I can think about is keeping it. Yeah. He's like, so now I'm not going to go anywhere. Like, I'm not going to go do this thing because I'd have to drive my car to do it. So in an early episode of season two, we start out talking about one thing. It's either about investing in real estate or appreciating wine. And it ends up that he had a very real brush with the Keith Raniere NXIVM cult.
Oh, God.
When he was in an a cappella group in college.
What? What?
And
oh my so God. I think only it was John Wilson. Oh, my God.
You know what? I think it was the How to Appreciate Wine episode, because it was like basically like you start hanging out with wine people and like you like kind of have this group, and he was like, you want to belong, and he was like, you know, in college, like I really wanted to belong. So I joined the a cappella group, and then they did this concert, and it turns out that the people from the NXIVM cult were like in this like it he had this huge, like they were basically trying to recruit them.
The event was called Acapella Innovations, and it was hosted by a man named Keith. He didn't have any background in acapella, but his bio said that he was one of the world's top three problem solvers, whatever that meant. He lurked around the venue all weekend, giving lofty speeches about the transformative power of acapella, and at one point even asked us for our social security numbers for some reason. When we finally had some downtime, we decided to Google Keith and everyone there for the first time. Their organization was something called NXIVM, and Keith was on a bunch of cult watch websites for running multi-level marketing schemes. We also read that some people even killed themselves after taking his executive success programs, and we all got really worried. They had set up this event to groom undergraduate students to join NXIVM. In their eyes, being into a cappella had pre-qualified us for a cult, because we were so eager to be accepted.
There's a shot for everything.
Yes.
For anything that he's talking about, there's a shot of B-roll in New York City to emphasize or like illustrate.
Yeah.
Illustrate the thought.
Can you imagine? Now, for new listeners, Brandon and I both work in TV development and production. Can you imagine the post-production lift on that show and just the sheer amount of footage that those poor AEs and junior editors had to sift through?
AE, like all I can think of when I'm watching it is like, you AEs are kings. We're kings.
Kings and queens alike. Oh my God.
Like, wow. But I can't recommend it enough. How To with John Wilson. It's on HBO, HBO Max. Check it out. The episodes are very short. I think the seasons are like 6 or 7 episodes long.
Yeah. And again, it's one of those shows like unlike any other show out there. It kind of lives on its own.
It really does.
Great pick. Oh my God. You have a really strong best category coming together here and still abiding by the rules. Still doing one drama, one comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I will also stick by the rules for my next one. I picked a drama. My next best is a comedy. I can't remember the last time you and I have talked about it. It did get a lot of attention over the summer. And then at the Emmy Awards, it won several awards, deservedly so. The best comedy of the year, in my opinion, is Hacks.
That's a good one.
Hacks on HBO Max, starring Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart, is like a two-hander of, you know, a veteran, you know, Vegas kind of insult comic played by Jean Smart and like a Gen Z millennial 25-year-old comedy writer who kind of gets canceled for a tweet in poor taste and has to take this job kind of helping Jean Smart write. Played by Hannah Einbinder, who plays Ava. And the show is created by, just speaking of creative pedigree, if you liked Broad City or anything in that sort of realm, Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky, the three of them are just like this trio of just absolute comedy geniuses. Paul Downs is in the show as both of their agents. So here's the thing. This show and another show that ended up in my favorites, another comedy, were very neck and neck. I knew they were both being in the criteria, and I wasn't sure where they were each going to go. So I rewatched some episodes, which is not something I generally do if I've recently watched something within like a year or so. But I needed to get straight what was going to go where. So literally earlier today, I watched the last three episodes of Hack season one. And when I tell you they hit, I just full body chills at several moments, especially in that last episode. And it really cemented like, no, there is not a better comedy on TV.
Excuse me. Did you have something else to say? Yeah. You've just been pretty rude and I dropped everything to come here. Oh, Christ. Oh, you wanted a gold star just for showing up? Kinda, yeah. Because you're right. I'm not a fan of yours. You caught me. This is all just a little fucking annoying because I flew all the way here on Spirit fucking Airlines, even though I didn't want this job in the first place. I mean, the last thing on earth I want to do is move to the desert to write some lame jokes for an old hack. By the way, so cool they let you move into a cheesecake factory.
Oh, is that where you wait tables? That seems like a better fit.
Oh, yeah, I agree, you classist monster. I'd rather slang bang bang chicken and shrimp all day than work here. I mean, fuck, what is this, 50 tassels on one couch? Even Liberace would think it's a bit much.
Oh, no, you're incorrect. He actually loved it. He did poppers on that couch in 85.
Cool. I'm glad Liberace's butthole was nice and loose in your house. Maybe you should have joined him since yours is obviously tight as fuck.
Laugh out loud funny. Tons of heart. Are you getting the theme of the types of shows that I really like?
But, tons of heart.
Some real star-making turns as well. Like Megan Stalter has blown up in the wake of this show, and she was always funny, but like her role as like the assistant on this show is incredible. You laugh every time she's on the screen. It's just top to bottom, best comedy of 2021, Hacks.
I've watched the first two episodes and I am into it. I just need to get back in and finish it out.
Brandy, you're the queen of, I've done two or three episodes of shows.
I know.
How do we get you past this? What are we going to do?
You know what? It's because like, I'll sit down. I have like, okay, I have this night. I'm going to watch some of these shows. And then I don't have another night again.
But it's like, because I think you're still watching a decent amount of TV. It's just like, you'll start one, do a couple episodes, and then almost be reminded like, oh, I should really check this other thing out.
Mm-hmm.
And then it prevents you from like seeing the earlier shows through. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I know. I mean, listen, in 2022, I'm going to be better about actually finishing shows that I like.
Got it. Okay. I'm not trying to shame you or anything like that. I'm just like,
No, I know. But like,
for me, it's like my brain just, I'm like, if I start something, I can't just leave it hanging. It gives me agita. Like I need to be like, well, no, I got to finish that before I start something else. Otherwise it's like starting two books at once. A lot of people can do that. I can't. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I need to do the one thing and then finish it and then do the next thing.
I know I think it's actually the product of there being so much television out there that like, I don't feel that anymore. And like, I definitely will really like something and I want to keep watching it, but it's also like, well, I got to watch, I had some time this night to do it. And then like, now I need to do this and now I need to do this. And then it just kind of gets caught in the, I always think like, oh, like when I go, like, I'm going to like be on a plane, I'll finish it.
Right.
Oh, I'm going to do this. I'm going to finish it. Like I had all these big plans. I'm in, Atlanta for the holidays. And it's like, oh yeah, I'm going to watch all these shows. I have watched just like many, many, many episodes of Cocomelon. and Gigantosaurus.
Right. That's the thing too, that I, you also have to contend with that. I don't, right. You have kids to program and watch along with or have on the TV. You also have a husband who likes television. So you got to find the shows that you can watch together. And then do you really have time to watch things by yourself? I totally get it. I'm giving you a hard time. Cause also I just, my brain doesn't work that way. So I'm like, I'm impressed. Like, how are you able to,
but I want to finish.
You sample so many things. I'm actually impressed by it. You know,
I do like to sample now.
Okay. So this is where it gets a little bit different. So far we've played by the rules. We've pretty much played by the regular BFF criteria rules, right? We've had some almost shows. We each chose two best shows. We didn't double up genres. We each chose a comedy and a drama. Here's where it gets different. Here's where the rules kind of get thrown out the window a little bit, where we expand and pick a third best show in our criteria for our 2021 BFFs. What do you got as your third best show?
My third best show is Succession.
Wait, so is mine.
I mean, great minds think alike. It's an amazing show.
A great minds think alike. I mean, and let's be honest, it's Succession. It's one of, if not the best show of the year.
Yeah.
I mean, I just went on this spiel about Station 11. Again, I haven't seen all those episodes. We have seen all of Succession season three. And boy, motherfucking howdy. Was that an excellent season of TV? Holy shit, Brandy.
It was so, so good. And it's what's so crazy about how good this show is that on its face, if you were to just read, like, not have any visuals or anything, like what this episode was about, there's one episode that's literally like, it's a board meeting.
Yeah. Kendall has a birthday.
Kendall has a birthday. They go to their they go to their mom's wedding.
Right.
But like so much happens. Like the season finale of season three was just one of the best episodes of television I think I've ever seen.
Wow. Okay, let's talk about it. So can we so this is a tricky one. How do we talk about this without spoiling? Or do we throw up a rare BFF spoiler warning and like spoil Succession a little bit here? What do you think?
I think we throw up a spoiler warning because I think anyone listening has 100% seen the finale of Succession. And if they haven't, they're probably not going to watch it.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you. We're going to spoil it. If you are in that rare sliver of people who just hasn't gotten around to it yet, skip ahead. Spoilers coming for Succession in 3, 2, 1. The Tom father of it all. Holy fucking shit. Yeah. I did not see it coming. We should have.
We totally should have.
They've been sprinkling breadcrumbs throughout, right? Where he like, Tom is like, volunteers to go to jail for Logan, gets a pat on the back for that. The earlier diner conversation with Kendall, where Tom's like, he kind of doesn't back Kendall because he's like, listen, I've never seen Logan get fucked ever. Mm-hmm. He doesn't lose. Like, we should have known, and yet we didn't. Meanwhile, the whole internet was like, is Kendall dead? And I fully subscribed at the end of episode 8, going into the season finale. You know, he's floating in that pool. He seems to all is lost. And I'm like, yeah, they're going to fucking kill him. They're apps. Because I thought that would be so bold.
You know, I thought they were going to kill him because I thought it was going to be like a Ned Stark type thing.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and I was like, penultimate episode. They always pull this kind of thing. They always kill off the person that you never think they're going to kill off. And I was like, and he's like, he's such a sad sack.
Yeah. And I think because in a lot of really smart people that I listen to about these shows made a good point where they were like, now would be a good, I think Chris Ryan from The Watch was really kind of shepherding, at least for me, the what else is there for him to do in his arc, right? Mm-hmm. He's kind of done anything. He doesn't really have any cards left to play. What else can he do? Has he done all that he can from a character arc perspective? And I kind of agree. I'm like, I'm with you, man. Let's kill him, make a bold move, and then see how the show readjusts. It keeps it interesting. So it's not just a horse race of these three kids jockeying for power. Succession was like, yeah, we know that that's what you would think. And we went a totally different way and did something else that you thought we would never do and have Logan sell his motherfucking company to Alexander Skarsgård.
Which also like we could have known because if this is like based on the Murdochs, there was the big, right, you know, Fox just sold sale. To Disney. Yeah,
exactly. Like, right.
The acting in the show is like is so good, and that they like Roman is just always on. Like even when like Kendall is at the like bottom of the barrel, end of his rope, admitting to all of these awful things that he's done, and Roman's like, "Oh, he hasn't run over a kid with a Porsche."
Yeah, right. Exactly.
You know, and like always, but it still sounded natural. It's like, oh, like he doesn't. He doesn't know how to not.
Right. He can't stop himself. Yeah. He can't stop himself. Which, where do you think they go next? What do you think happens next season?
Next season, I think that we're finally going to see the three siblings united.
I hope so.
Which we haven't seen yet.
And by the way, Brandy, there's four siblings. Let's not forget about Connor.
I'm sorry. Listen.
Which is a big point in the finale, too.
There's more to see from Connor, like something like the whole him and Willa thing. Like that's, I feel like we're going, we've got a big wedding. I feel like Connor and Willa's, there's something's going to happen at Connor and Willa's wedding.
So, yeah, like for sure.
I'm putting that out there. Like, let's just watch out for that. I'm not sure what's going to go down there, but something's going down.
Right.
Because I also love that, like, they kind of have the thing what I like is I feel like season four is kind of almost starting fresh, because there's been like this hanging of the kid who Kendall killed that's kind of been hanging over them. But as they kind of talked about in the finale, like, Kendall, you're never getting in trouble for that. It's the kid, like, you actually didn't do anything, and we're rich enough and insulated enough that, like, you would literally have to be like, arrest me and take me away.
Right.
For that to happen.
Yeah. And I think some people had predicted that that would, could be a way for a kind of a way out for Kendall's character, right? Like, okay, if he doesn't kill himself or doesn't die in this pool, then maybe what he can do is turn himself in and flip on his dad, because the cover up is always worse than the crime, and his dad covered it up.
Yeah.
And maybe that's the way to bring Logan down, which could still be in play for season two. Now that all the siblings know about it.
Yeah.
Logan doesn't know that the kids know. Mm-hmm. Right. So maybe that is still a card they have left to play.
But I just feel like we're like the kind of the table is now is set anew
for this
season. You know what I mean? Like they can't jockey for power anymore because he's selling the company. So it's like, all right, so what are you going to do now? Are you trying to get in with Mattson? Are you trying to like do your own thing? Like, what are you going to do now?
Like the line that Logan said when I think Chip was like, what do we do? And he's like, build your own fucking pile.
Yeah.
Make your own thing. Do something that will make me actually respect you, fucking idiots who can never get it together to actually be a killer and take me down. Like, that's what he respects. He wants someone to like actually come at him and not miss.
Yeah.
You know, and like earn it.
Such a great show. Yeah. So good. It was definitely the, I think Succession was maybe the best show of 2021.
I mean, it's right up there. It's right up there. So, okay, let's do a quick recap. Your top three best shows of 2021. What was in your best?
My best are Squid Game, How to with John Wilson, and Succession.
Okay. Yeah. Of those three, I would probably clock Succession as the top of those three. Mm-hmm. My three were Succession, Hacks, and Station 11, just edging out Mare of Easttown.
I mean, I feel like Station 11 might become the best for you if they continue at this, at the pace that they're going now, you know, with these episodes.
It might. And the thing for like, it has such Dan Brown vibes. Like, okay, I'm a big fan of genre. So we got a post-apocalyptic story based on a novel that I read and loved. Like, that just checks so many boxes. And not only that, it's performing at a level that some other recent adaptations that I've been equally as hyped for have not. So like, it also has that kind of edge up. So we'll see though. We'll see. We'll check back in the new year and see if there's been any shifts to the criteria. You never know.
Yeah.
It's been a while since we recorded ours, and a lot has transpired in the TV landscape since then. So we shall see.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's move on to our favorites. And again, we're going to be picking three favorites each to round out our top 10. And the genre rules do not apply, so we can double up, triple up in a genre. All bets are off. Brandy, what is your first favorite show of 2021?
My first favorite show is White Lotus.
Ooh, okay. So this would have been an honorable mention for me. I liked it a lot, but it didn't crack my criteria. This may be one of our kind of biggest differences in opinion, because for me, it wasn't even close really to my criteria. Why did you love it so much?
I just was thoroughly entertained by every piece of the show. Well, first of all, I liked that like it kind of took a minute to get into it, because you're like, wow, every single person is absolutely terrible. But then all of a sudden, it's just like, I want to see everything. I want to see, I want to see it all. And I was super interested. I love the upstairs, downstairs look of everything. Look at everything. Yeah,
it's a good vibe.
I love that the upstairs, like, wasn't even really that upstairs. Like, come on. Like, Tammy Taylor couldn't get a fucking two bedroom.
Right. Yeah. Her fucking kid is sleeping in like the kitchenette.
Yeah.
You know, like.
But like, I loved Armand and Belinda. In fact, my husband and I dressed as Armand and Belinda for Halloween.
Nice.
I love the setting in Hawaii. It was really nice to be there, like in these COVID times, like to just see this beautiful landscape. And I thought they did a really amazing job with like it didn't feel like a COVID show, even though it obviously was a COVID show.
Yeah. Like those extras are probably in every scene, but we didn't notice, you know, because I think it was a really smart move to be like, yeah, set it at a resort where we only need 50 people. And those will just be our 50 people.
Yeah.
Cause it makes sense, because they would all be at this resort anyway.
I thought the writing was really smart. I thought all of the characters were like all like equally detestable, but like there was like little shimmers and glimmers of.
I want to push back on that. I don't think everyone was detestable. I didn't think Belinda was detestable.
No, I'm mostly talking about like the people staying at the hotel.
Oh, the vacation goers.
The upstairs.
Gotcha.
Folks were all like pretty, like even the ones that you thought like. Jennifer Coolidge, you think like, oh, like I actually feel really bad for her. And you're like, oh no, she's also a piece of shit.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Just totally leading our girl Belinda on.
Yeah.
Just absolutely breaking her heart at the end there. Now, how do you feel about it coming back in kind of like a somewhat anthology format? So I think the deal is like, there's going to be another season. Mm-hmm. It's going to still be called White Lotus. It will be set at a different White Lotus resort at which Jennifer Coolidge's character is on some sort of trip. So like she will be the one crossover character, it sounds like, but then everything else will be new. Where do you want it to be? What are you expecting? Kind of what are your thoughts on what might come next?
I like the anthology format. I think that the show worked best as a character study. Mm-hmm. And I'm interested to see what other characters we can put in there. Like what I'm really interested to see is if everybody, like especially considering that Jennifer Coolidge will be return, like kind of like a through line, if we are going to get people that feel different than the newlywed couple, than the family, then you know what I mean? Like I'm excited to see who we'll meet next. Like I trust Mike White to give us the goods.
Yeah.
You know,
I do too. Gosh, we should try and get Mike White on the show. Cause not only does he just like create these incredible pieces of art, he also like played and I think won Survivor, right? Like he knows TV from all aspects at this point. Yeah.
I mean, I trust him and, you know, take me to season 2 White Lotus. Let me see what happens with Jennifer Coolidge and that guy who is obviously dying.
That's right. Okay. All right. Nice favorite pick. A little surprising. I wasn't expecting that. That's a good one.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah. So what's your first favorite?
My first favorite. Okay. So my first show, I kind of alluded to it before when I was talking about Hacks. It's another comedy and I was kind of going back and forth about where to put this show, whether this should be best, whether Hack should be best or favorites, vice versa. And I talked about it somewhat recently on our current catch up in the last bonus episode, but my first favorite show is Reservation Dogs. It's an FX on Hulu show created by Sterling Harjo and Taika Waititi. It's about four teenagers living on a Indian reservation in Oklahoma. And it's just awesome. I mentioned I rewatched a couple of Hacks episodes. I only had time to watch three of those because when I went back to watch a couple of Reservation Dogs, I just watched the whole fucking show. I watched the whole season again. I watched all 8 episodes. I couldn't stop because I love it. It's just, and I put it in my favorite because I did see like, there's a couple, like it's not the best thing I've seen all year, but it is very clearly one of my favorite things. It's a world that as soon as I went back in, I didn't want to leave. I needed to see it through. It gives me sort of Friday Night Lights vibes in that, like, mm-hmm. I firmly believe that this town exists and you could just go there and be there mm-hmm. and hang out. The world feels so fully built out and so fully realized it almost in like an effortless sort of way. And the show itself, I think, does a lot of cool things with tone where it starts very clear, like, oh, this is a comedy about these four characters. The characters, their names are Bear, Willie Jack, Alora, and Cheese. They're just like four kind of like they call them on the show a term of kind of like a ribbing term of endearment, you know, expletive they use as shit asses. These four shit asses that just get into trouble, but all in the name of trying to save money to leave the reservation and move to California. We learn that a friend of theirs passed away a year before the events of this show. We slowly get to figure out why and how he passed. And it's very affecting. But it starts as like, it's a comedy and like a situational thing in this really, you know, fully realized world and good characters. And then it turns and you get like halfway through, you get episodes 5, 6, and 7, where you think this one kid Bear is like the lead. And then you get these three kind of one-offs that each focus on a different character. One is about Cheese going on a ride along with like the cop character named Big. That might be my favorite episode of the season because that's kind of where I noticed like, oh, this shift of like, wait, they're doing something interesting here. This Cheese character who I thought was on the periphery is now like the main focus of this episode. And then they did that with Willie Jack and her dad going hunting.
How is California better than here?
Because Snoop Dogg's from there. Dr. Dre. Shitty fucking Dr. Phil.
But it's fun here. There's things to do here. Oh, eat catfish and walk around, and you can ride your bike and, you know, just walk around and look at things.
Yeah, well, stuff I want to do, you can't do here.
Damn.
You're the one that told me I could be whatever I want.
Well, you're right. I do tell you that.
Why didn't you ever leave?
Nothing out there for me. Everything I want is here. My family, my friends. I just always believe, tend to my own garden. Let everyone else tend to theirs. You'll see. You know, people leave here all the time. They come right back. Because this is where their people are. This is their home.
They did that with Laura, taking her driver's ed test with an old coach of hers, played by Bill Burr. And you learn like more and more personal things, and like it gets emotional. It turns into like, fuck, I think I'm watching a drama now all of a sudden. And it's still funny and light in parts, but yeah, it's for all of those reasons. I can't wait for season two. I'd watch it a third time tomorrow if I had time. Really, really, really good show.
Well, you, I did take your recommendation on the show, and I have watched my customary two episodes.
Nice. Love it. Love it.
But did really enjoy it. And I did actually almost start episode three, but then I was like, oh, I'm not gonna be able to finish it. So I didn't start it knowing that I was not gonna be able to finish it. So gotcha. It's like, I'm not gonna start it.
You're in a pretty good spot though. So you watched the pilot with kind mm-hmm. of the heist, and then you saw like the clinic episode, which
the clinic episode
also like really like, oh wow, this is a fucking community of people that like clearly know each other and is very lived in, and like
yeah
goes up. And that's the thing with a show, like in eight episodes it does so much to build this world and these characters in a way that I just thought was really, really impressive, and why I was going back and forth on is it best, is it favorite, but just the feeling that it gives me, you know, like favorites are more emotional picks and this is a more emotional mm-hmm. feeling show for me, and that's why it is where it is. Favorite show.
Awesome. Well, for my second favorite show, it's also a comedy that has a lot of heart and can also have a little bit of drama. And it's currently in its last season, which like I'm so sad. And I actually haven't been watching it week to week because like I'm really sad that it's going to be ending.
Yeah.
So I've kind of been like saving up episodes, but not binging them, just like watching them one at a time.
Okay.
But that show is Insecure.
Issa.
And Issa, Molly, Kelly, Tiffany, Lawrence, Nathan, everyone. I love you all. I don't want you to not be in my life anymore. Like I wanna know what happens. It's so you know, the previous season of Insecure ended with Lawrence finding out that he had gotten Condola pregnant. They were no longer together. He and Issa were trying to start a thing. Mm-hmm. And now in this last season, Issa has decided that like she does not want that. So they basically, the first episode of this last season was her figuring that out. And then there was like kind of a time jump, which was okay. Really effective.
Interesting. Okay, cool.
Just a time jump so that she's like, we don't have to watch her get successful at what she's doing. She just is kind of there.
Or oh, that's
like,
nice.
Or like on the cusp, you know what yeah, I mean? Yeah, but yeah. It's like, that's but nice. We don't need to see like the day to day of like her hustling. But like, we know she hustled.
Cause that was a lot of the first three, four seasons, yeah. You know? Yeah.
So now we can really concentrate on like, okay, so like she's where she wants to be. What now? But like, just the show is just like such a beautiful like testament to like, best friendship.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And you know, I love a show about best friends, but also it's just like, you know, I love the LA of it all. Cause I don't really know LA, but I feel like through Insecure, I do know LA.
Yeah.
The music is absolutely amazing. It's like, I'll hear a song and I'm like, is this Insecure? I feel like I'm in Insecure. nice. It's just like, it's such great music. I love that like all of the characters are like a little flawed. Like nobody is like totally 100% like, oh yeah, you do the, you know how to do the right thing. It's like, no, Issa, like you are hella problematic. Molly, you also so problematic. Like everyone is problematic except for Kelly, who just totally owns that like she is not perfect, never will be, and she's just gonna do her own thing.
That's the thing. Owning your problematic makes you less problematic.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, it really does. But yeah, so by the time this episode drops, the entire season will have, the fifth season will be done, which means the series will be done.
Oh my
God. Which is just like so sad. But you know what? Issa Rae has like a ton of cool shit coming out. Like, yeah. You know, she's in our lives now, which is great. But like, as much as I love Issa Rae, I love Issa Dee. And I'm going to miss her. And I'm gonna miss the antics that they get up to. And it's been, and you can tell they took a lot of care with this last season, and like they want to make sure that like they're wrapping everything up as it can be wrapped up while still like being true to real life, as I feel that it is. And
right.
In real life, things aren't, you know, just because things don't just end, you know, like it's still going.
Yeah.
So like I think that they've been doing a really great job with like keeping that part, like not wrapping things up so totally that it doesn't feel real anymore.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
This is one that I watched and loved the first three seasons, fell off just for no other reason than there was a lot of other TV going on. And I think I kind of missed season four, but then knew it was coming back for five. So I thought I'll just wait. So yeah, I think this is another one along with Dave that I can promise you the next time we record in 2022, I will have caught up.
You're like really lucky.
I know. I feel it's funny. It is weird where it's like, cause I feel similarly to you, the way we're talking about how we're watching shows. It's like, I simultaneously want you to watch the thing so we can talk about them, but feel jealous that you get to still watch them for the first mm-hmm. time. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is shaping up to be a very strong representation of the best TV of 2021. I absolutely love it. Here's where things are going to go off the rails though, Brandy. I want to drop a bomb here into our criteria. I'm going to cheat in a pretty massive way. Kind of. Well, yeah, no, I'm going to cheat. So my second favorite pick, let me just give a little bit of background in case this is your first episode. I am a massive nerd. I love all things genre, fantasy, sci-fi. So like Star Wars, yes. Thrones, yes. Harry Potter, absolutely. Marvel, 1,000%. Big fan. So I've been very much up on the Marvel cinematic universe, but specifically in TV terms, the Marvel Disney Plus universe. And that, Randy, if you'll allow it, is my pick. My second favorite pick is going to be the Marvel Disney Plus universe, because I will argue that it is all under one umbrella, right? It's all the same universe. The characters, while they don't appear in each other's shows per se, for these specific shows that have already aired, we know that they exist in, you know, a kind of under the umbrella that is, you know, Marvel and Kevin Feige and all those things. So yeah, I'm cheating and I'm aware, but I'm throwing WandaVision, Loki, and Hawkeye together into a gift wrap package and submitting that as my second favorite pick. How do you feel about it?
You know what? I'll allow it, and we'll get into why I allow it after we talk about it.
Okay. All right. So you are not a Marvel person.
I did watch WandaVision.
You did watch WandaVision.
I did like it.
WandaVision was excellent. I think it started really, really strong. It was the first entry of the, what I'm going to refer to as the MDU, the Marvel Disney Plus universe, not the MCU, the MDU. It was the first entry into the MDU. And it started as like an homage to classic sitcoms, which I thought was really cool and really apt. It wasn't supposed to be the first show. That was supposed to be Falcon and the Winter Soldier, which is not kind of lumped into this grouping. Mm-hmm. I think it was fine. You know, it kind of set up who the next Captain America will be. Spoiler alert, it's Falcon is now Captain America. And that's all well and good. It's great. And I look forward to seeing that character do more. The show, though, by itself, not great. WandaVision, though, I thought was really good. Got into its Marvel bullshit towards the end and kind of veered away from like the TV homage that a lot of people liked about it. A lot of non-Marvel people liked about it, but I think wrapped up pretty well. Specifically, the second to last episode I thought was really, really good. The finale kind of lagged a little bit. And then we got to Loki. And Loki, Loki introduced the concept of the multiverse, really, which is a word that if you've been paying attention to any Marvel at all, you know well, everything's about the multiverse. Spider-Man No Way Home was all about multiverse of all the movies, or many of the movies moving forward are going to be dealing with multiversal stuff. And Loki was a crucial linchpin, introduced a crucial character that's going to be like the next big bad on like a Thanos level big bad in movies and TV shows to come for years, you know, at least a couple years down the line, played by Jonathan Majors, who was fucking excellent. Probably the best finale of any of the Marvel shows was the Loki finale. That was a quick watch. It was 6 episodes, super, super fun. And then the most recent one that just finished up recently is Hawkeye, which is kind of like a Christmas set. Jeremy Renner, who plays Hawkeye, kind of passing the torch to the next version played by Haley Steinfeld. And this one is just like super fun. It's funny. It's light. From what I understand, I'm not a comics reader. It lines up closer to a specific comics run than a lot of the other Marvel stuff has so far. And what I think what a lot of these shows have done and why I like them all so much is that they've given new perspective and new depth to characters in the MCU that didn't get a ton of shine beforehand, right? So WandaVision was all about Wanda Maximoff and Vision, who were kind of on the outskirts of things. Loki was a villain for much of the MCU, and that really kind of turned him into someone you want to root for his show. And then Hawkeye, I mean, he was like the guy who shot arrows with no real superpowers. And now it's really digging into that and what that means. And the whole show is really about people without any actual superpowers. They're just kind of like skilled at what they do. And what does that mean for them and their place in the larger story? I've rambled on far too long about the MCU. I can see your face. You're ready to move on. And that's totally fine. My rant is almost over. I appreciate you for indulging me. I yield back my time to the floor. And thank you for allowing me to submit the Marvel Disney Plus universe as my second favorite pick of 2021. It just meant so much to me. I couldn't not, you know?
Listen, you got me to watch WandaVision and I did. So maybe I'll watch some other stuff. But like selfishly, I also was okay with you doing the Marvel universe because for my third favorite pick,
okay,
I am doing the Real Housewives universe for 2021.
I heard you with my own ears publicly talk about, well, Brooks has never seen a vagina. Those are negative, homophobic microaggressions for a young adult who has not determined where he stands. It's horribly painful for someone to be pressured to talk about something they're not ready to talk about. It has to stop. Enough is enough. And I need to know that you are against homophobic hate and that you support the LGBT.
What are you talking about?
Okay. I'm talking about reality.
Okay, so reality is, I am tired of like sitting here getting accused of stuff when I have never said anything.
Did you like a comment referring to my son as a sissy bitch?
No!
Yes, you did. Okay. You know what? You want me to take it out? It's on your Twitter. You don't know what's going on your own Twitter? Here we go. Jen Shaw.
I mean, we have to allow it. Absolutely. Yeah. Let's talk about it. I love it.
All right. So I will say that the Housewives got off to a rocky start because at the beginning of this year, two things happened. One, Salt Lake City started.
Mm-hmm.
And Salt Lake City had started filming pre-COVID.
Right.
So and then I think they kind of like rushed it so that it would be out. So it was kind of like the last gasp of like, oh, like normal life, right? So everything after that was filming during COVID, and New York had a hard time. Atlanta had a hard time.
Right.
I didn't even watch OC because I was like, I was just over OC.
I feel like you've been out on OC for a little while now, right?
Yeah. I'm going to go back in this year because they got rid of like the more problematic folks. But the reason that the Housewives universe has made my criteria is because of a few things. One, Salt Lake came back. Both Salt Lake, Beverly Hills, and Potomac like showed up and showed out this year.
I mean, even I don't watch, you know, this is one of my blind spots. Even I feel like I'm pretty up to date on the Jen Shaw legal drama. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
Even I'm aware.
So, and for Beverly Hills, you had the Erica Jane. Right. So Erica Jane was married to Tom Girardi. He was a very famous lawyer. He was the Aaron Brockovich lawyer. He's super, super rich. She's always like flaunting her money. Like she's got she's on private jets. Like she's also like, he's like financed her career as like a pop star. And he is basically been indicted for allegedly scamming millions of dollars from plane crash victims and orphans.
Right. And the whole thing was, what did and for how long did Erica know? And
yeah.
Did she know? Right. That's the whole.
Yeah. That's the whole thing. And like, my personal opinion is that, like, I don't think she knew the specifics, but like, I think that she knew enough to not ask questions, which means you knew.
Fair enough.
But then you have, so that was just like the gift that kept giving. And then you get Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, where you find out during the show that during filming that Jen Shaw, who is one of the housewives, has been arrested for frauding people out of defrauding elderly people. Like, she had, like, I still don't quite understand what her crime was, but it has something to do with like selling information of elderly people and getting them to give her money, and just like nothing looks good. And right. her assistant, and like, because the funny thing with her is always, it was just like, people would be credited as like, or lower thirded as like, Jen Shaw's first assistant, Jen Shaw's second assistant, third assistant. So like, the first assistant was also arrested with her. And as of like a couple of weeks ago, he has now flipped and he has changed his plea to guilty.
Ooh, shit. Yeah. Okay, things are coming.
But this, they caught all of this on camera when the feds came to get her, because they were getting ready to go on a girls trip. So yeah, it just like, it's just been really, really quality entertainment. And like I was saying when I was talking about Shaw's earlier, is that Bravo has had a bit of a, like, you know, just a kind of a franchise fatigue.
Yeah.
But Potomac is one of the newer franchises. It's been around, I think, for 5 years. And Salt Lake, obviously, this is only its second season now. And I mean, Potomac is just great, you know, like, Bravo, just do more all Black cast shows, because like, they're the best shows you have.
And to your Shaws of Sunset as well, just like more casts of color, like across the board. Let's go. Question for you, is part of the Housewives extended universe, does the, like, is it a Peacock thing? I don't know much about it, but isn't there like a Housewives like road trip show?
So that is also a part of the universe, which is the Housewives Girls Trip.
There it is.
Which is like basically bringing together all of your housewives from all of your different seasons. And they did it with this. I was wondering when, because it's like, this hadn't even come out yet and they'd already greenlit season two. And I was like, really, guys? Like, you're really putting all your eggs in this basket? But then I saw the first few episodes of season one, and it's amazing. So good.
Nice.
It's like, it breaks every rule of reality TV. Like, they reference the shows that they're on. Anyway, the Real Housewives universe, like, they just, Potomac, if you're not watching, you should start. It was great. The reunion was four parts. The fourth part was hosted by Nicki Minaj.
Four-part reunions?
Oh, a four-part reunion.
Get out of town.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Well, I'm glad that they staged a bit of a comeback. You know, started 2021 on a downside, and by all accounts, Housewives franchise is firing on all cylinders.
Mm-hmm, they really are. And then I haven't watched yet, but they just, Peacock is also doing, they brought back the Real Housewives of Miami.
That's the Peacock. Okay, right. Yeah.
But I've heard only good things, so I'm excited.
Wow. Wow.
And they just greenlit Housewives of Dubai, which is going to be the first international.
Fuck,
like,
yeah.
There are several international housewives that, like, but they're not technically under like the Bravo Housewives banner. Like, they don't air on Bravo. So there's like a Real Housewives of Melbourne.
So kind of like the way that, like, the Jersey Shore expanded, but none of them actually aired on MTV. Yeah.
But this Real Housewives of Dubai, I think, is actually going, it's like Andy Cohen sanctioned. It's going to be on Bravo.
Nice. I love it. And I love that pick. Listen, like I said, we're breaking all the rules. This is a smorgasbord of television. We are not holding back. Yes, we are talking about our loose top tens, but by that, we really mean like 10 to 15, because that's who we are. And that's what we do. We watch all the shows. We're going to tell you about them. But that brings us to, I think, the last pick on, because that was your final pick, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of your favorites.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So on to my third and final favorite pick. It's a show that I may have mentioned on the podcast. I'm not sure. It may have only been in passing, but I really, really love this show. I don't think it gets enough attention. It's on Apple TV Plus. It finished its second season. It aired its second season in 2021. It is called For All Mankind.
Oh, tell me about it. Cause I don't know. I actually know nothing about it.
Okay. I mentioned that I'm a nerd who loves all things genre shows. I also love anything set in space. And this show is a space show. So basically the premise is, what if the Russians won the space race? What if the Russians got to the moon first? What if it wasn't Neil Armstrong that walked on the moon first? What if it was a Russian cosmonaut? What would happen? So it's kind of like an alternative history, historical fiction-esque, using real people and a lot of fictional people as well. But it's created by Ronald D. Moore, who did Battlestar Galactica, which is on my almost list, and an absolute all-timer. I think we talked about that on the James Coker episode, actually. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so For All Mankind, it just finished the second season. What I love about it is it churns through story in such a fun way. Like over the course of two seasons, I think it started like, you know, in the late, you know, mid late 60s during like the space race. By the time we get to the end of season two, like the kind of teaser at the end is like, it's the 90s, right? So it's like they're churning through story. The characters remain constant. So you get to really see that character growth. But it's really interesting to think like, what would have happened if Russia got there first? It actually would have turned not just like the space race is told by the show, kind of evolves into like an arms race. And the moon becomes like another base of military operations. And all of a sudden there's guns on the moon and international incidents on the moon and wars potentially started over things happening on the moon and settlements and mining for precious, you know, resources and like all this really fucking cool shit. It's just like, whoa, like, you know, you look at all these billionaires trying to race to space. And this is kind of like, what if we did that, but like 30 years sooner and actually kind of like colonize the moon in a sort of way? It's super fun in that kind of like alternative history aspect of it, but also just like an incredibly well done, well written, well acted. You got Joel Kinnaman is one of the main roles in season one and continues on into season two. And it's surprising how they used history, like actual American history, in its favor. Like one, for instance, is like, you know, who was the Kennedy that had the Chappaquiddick incident that like killed someone?
Ted
Kennedy, right? So like in this version of history, Ted Kennedy actually doesn't make that trip to Chappaquiddick because he's tied up in Senate hearings about this new moon base. So he never kills that person. And that never happens, right? So it's like all this, like, wait a second. It really plays around with what history could have been if just this one thing changed, if Russia got to the moon first.
Wow.
And it's just like that sort of shit I absolutely love. Like I mentioned, anything in space, Apollo 13 is one of my all-time favorite movies. I mentioned how much I love Battlestar Galactica. So like, all of that checks those boxes. But then like, again, like I'm a sucker for a good character arc in well-written characters and well-acted characters. And there's if you watch the show, I'm going to say two names. If you haven't watched it, I won't spoil anything, but the saga of Tracy and Gordo is just, it's moving. It's sad. It's funny. It's heartbreaking. Anyone who I know who watches the show was an absolute emotional wreck at the end of season two. And like that really great, fulfilling TV way. Can't recommend it enough. It does not get enough attention outside of like the critical sphere because it's just such a well done show, but more people need to be watching. Get on your Apple TV, watch For All Mankind, reach out when you have, and we'll talk about it because it's fucking excellent.
Oh my, I love it. You again, Dan, you're selling me.
This is what we do for a living, Brandy. I mean, this is our thing.
Sold.
All right. So we've got our list. Should we do a quick recap?
Yeah. So my top 10 list for 2021, my almost shows, the other two, Shaw's of Sunset, Dave, and A Black Lady Sketch Show. My best shows to get into the BFF of it all, Succession, Squid Game, and How To with John Wilson. And my favorite shows were White Lotus, The Real Housewives Universe, specifically talking about Potomac, Salt Lake City, Beverly Hills, to a certain extent, the beginning of New York before Ramona turned full racist, and Atlanta up until Bolo, and Insecure.
I love that list. It's just very Brandy from top to bottom. I love that about it. Great mix of drama, comedy, and unscripted, more so than mine. Which I really appreciate and respect. My top 10, which really, if I'm looking at it, is more like a top 12 or 13 because I cheated massively. But my top 10, starting with my almost shows, were Mythic Quest, tied with Ted Lasso, Top Chef Portland, Kevin Can Fuck Himself, and Squid Game. My best shows were Station 11, just edging out Mayor of Easttown, Hacks, best comedy of the year, and Succession, which we shared. And then my favorites were Reservation Dogs, Everybody Watch, I Will Never Stop Saying That, the Marvel Disney Plus Universe, which includes specifically WandaVision, Loki, and Hawkeye, and then last but not least, For All Mankind. Oof, that's a lot of TV. And guess what, Brandy? That's not all.
Nope.
Because if you know anything about this show, we have a BFF criteria, and we've only talked about 1B and 1F, and we can't leave you hanging without that final F. So similar to what we did in our most recent bonus episode where we did current criteria, it's hard to pick a forever show from just this year of television. So we're going to do what we did last time and throw out as kind of a lightning round a handful of future shows that we're looking forward to in 2022. And again, because we are who we are, I don't have a short list. I'll be honest with you. It's not short, but we'll rip through it pretty quickly. I know we're long on time here more than normal. So I've kind of organized my future list here, Brandy, into two categories. One, brand new shows that are premiering for the first time in 2022. And then after that, returning shows that really could be criteria contenders, depending on how these new seasons or these final seasons shake out. So I'll start with my new shows real quick, and I'm going to rip through them. As We See It on Amazon Prime, a show created by Jason Kadams of Friday Night Lights and Parenthood fame. Duh, Jason Kadams. I'm always going to check it out. And this one is about, I believe, a group of autistic friends. Jason Kadams has an autistic son that influenced the character of Max on Parenthood. So very interested to see what he does with that subject matter. Really looking forward to it. The Gilded Age on HBO. Julian Fellowes, who created Downton Abbey. It's a period piece set in New York City. Let's go. A League of Their Own, a new comedy on Amazon, co-created by Abby Jacobson of Broad City fame. And the show will live in the same universe as the movie, one of my favorite movies of all time, A League of Their Own. And then two just big, like I mentioned, big genre nerd staples that we're all looking forward to: House of the Dragon on HBO, the Game of Thrones spinoff set 200 years before when there were dozens of dragons still flying in the air. And it's kind of like a Targaryen Civil War sort of deal. And then the big one on Amazon, the Lord of the Rings series. Not coming until September. We got a long wait, but fuck am I excited for that one. What about you, Brandy? What new shows are you looking forward to in the near future?
So I split mine up like you did too. So in my new shows, a couple of these shows have already started, but they're not, I haven't watched them yet, and they literally just started.
Okay.
So I have Selling Tampa, which is a Netflix show, unscripted, in the Selling Sunset mold, but it's about an all black real estate agency. And I just, first of all, like, Tampa, what?
Let's go.
Like, how are we making that? Like, Selling Sunset, I get it, but like, Tampa, what? So I'm really interested to see, and that also feels like the kind of show that like I wish that I had sold and cast.
Yeah, good one.
And Just Like That, which is the new Sex in the City. I don't know if you call it a spin-off, like continuation.
Yeah.
Continuation.
Yeah.
It follows our favorite gals, minus Samantha, as they're navigating their 50s in New York. And as of this recording, 3 episodes have aired. I have watched 2. So I won't spoil anything for those of you who like have been living under a rock. But, you know, there's mixed reviews on it right now. And
mixed reviews. And you could read those reviews in between Peloton rides. Who knows?
Yeah. But yeah, so I'm excited about that. I'm also excited about House of the Dragon.
Yeah.
I loved the book.
Oh, I'm reading it. I'm reading it now, actually.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It's really good. And I feel like I like it better. I almost like it better than Game of Thrones because like it's contained. Mm-hmm. Like this is the beginning, the middle, and the end. Whereas Game of Thrones, there's like, I mean, is he ever going to finish it?
That's the crucial part. It has an ending. We know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the other one I'm excited about is going to be on HBO, and it's with Bridget Everett, and it's called Somebody Somewhere. And I can't even tell you what it's about because I really don't understand what it's about. But like, Bridget Everett is amazing, and I'll watch anything that she's in. And the fact that like she's going to be headlining her own show is just so amazing, and I can't wait to watch it. It's a comedy, but like okay, I'm sure it's going to be. It'll probably also be like kind of sad, but like also hilarious.
Okay, nice. I've never heard of that actually, so I'm going to have to look into that. I love that. Yeah. And then a couple others that are returning that are like deep season shows, which to me brings them up into like criteria, you know, category. Will they make it once we see how everything concludes? We got The Crown coming back for season 5, continuing the Diana story. We got Stranger Things season 4, coming out, long waited. It'll be like 3 years between seasons by the time that comes out. Wow. Marvelous Mrs. Maisel coming back for, I think it's fourth season as well. Ozark coming back. I think that's its final season. And then also the final season of Better Call Saul, which,
oh wow,
I mean, bringing it all the way back to when we did our criteria, I had said it was between Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad is my best drama, and I'm waiting for Better Call Saul to finish. It might take that spot. So we'll see. Looking forward to it.
And my things that are coming back, I also have Better Call Saul, but then I also have Better Things. It's such a good show. If you haven't watched it, get on that. It's on FX on Hulu. This Is Us season 6.
Another final, a lot of final seasons happening. Jesus.
I know. I feel like I'm already going to cry.
I'm getting choked up thinking about it. I know.
Yeah. I'm also excited for, as we were talking, I spoke about the Real Housewives universe, sure. Real Housewives Ultimate Girls Trip season 2, because it's got as if you could even get better housewives than the one for the first season. It's like, they've topped themselves and they're going to be like in the first, the season that's on right now, they're in, I think like Turks and Caicos or something. In season 2, they're going to be at Dorinda's Bluestone Manor, which, ooh, if you were a Housewives fan, you know about Dorinda's Berkshire house and the things that go down there. And
even I have heard of the Berkshires.
Yeah. Right? Like, so that's going to be amazing. And I'm also really excited about Righteous Gemstones is coming back for season 2. It's coming back in January.
Yeah. Nice. Good one. Good one. Great show.
And Atlanta season 3.
Oh my God, how did I forget that? Of course. Oh my God. Yes. Atlanta.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So, it's an embarrassment of riches. And it means that we'll have plenty to talk about in 2022. We will be back in the new year with new episodes, with new guests. We're hard at work lining those up, and we're excited to get back to kind of our original BFF criteria conversations and get those up and running again. Mm-hmm. Lots to look forward to. Thank you to everyone for listening all year long. It's been so fucking fun, Brandy, talking about TV with you, especially in this way.
It really has.
You know, slicing it up into best favorite and forever has been really fun, really rewarding for me just to kind of see this project through. And I'm so glad that we were able to do it together. I'm looking forward to more. I can't wait to talk about more of these shows, new shows, different shows we haven't even seen yet or heard about yet. There's so much TV. That's the whole point. We love it. And we're not going to stop talking about it.
No, it's going to be great. I've had an amazing time doing this. I feel like this year, like 2021, was the year of the BFFs.
Yeah.
But you know, this was Dan's idea. He brought me on board. We got started and we've done the damn thing. And I'm super proud of what we have accomplished this year. It's been really, really fun. And I can't wait for what we're going to do next year. We're going to have some awesome guests on. We're going to talk about some awesome shows. And please, if you don't already, follow us on Instagram. We are at TVBFF Podcast. And also, if you haven't already, like, we want to know what your 6 are, like what's your BFF criteria. And you can email us at tvbffpodcast@gmail.com. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. That's right.
I'm tired, guys. Sorry.
And with that, let's all go to bed. Until next time. Goodbye, friends.
Bye, friends.